This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you.
You know, it's a good Sunday morning, and I do have to say, in the midst of all of this craziness, or as we would say, tumult that's going on in the world in the last few weeks, you know, 7 million person marches and, you know, all this, you know, divisiveness and division in the country and new things every day that we've never experienced before. And people really struggling with it on all sides of the spectrum. Nobody out there trying to bring people together. Everybody trying to pull them apart. It's good that we're focusing on some things that are not involved in all of that. You know, you got to step away from it once in a while. People are stepping away by, you know, watching sports. This is the time of year where almost every professional sport is on. So people are watching that. They're engaged in pickleball and golf, and they're trying to, you know, do family things in an attempt to avoid all of the constant focus on political upheaval. And so I'm glad today that we have a show about a compassionate, you know, Missoula-based childcare organization that's been around for over almost 50 years now, doing great work for children in need. And we're going to focus on that today and try to have an uplifting story about good things that the community is involved with.
Well, you're right, Arnie. Watson Children's Shelter and Children's Center is a return guest. And you're right. They do great work here in Missoula. They take care of a lot of affected families in the region. They have a new executive director, Stacey Hogue. She's going to join us along with Andrew Vashenko, who is the assistant director, both from Watson Children's Center. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guests, Andrew Vashenko and Stacey Hogue from Watson Children's Shelter.
Stacey, Andrew, it's a pleasure to have you on the show and fill us in as well as our listeners about, you know, Watson's Children's Center and all the work that you've been engaged in the past and you know, what maybe some of the plans of the future are going to be, and then a little bit about you and Andrew. So for openers, why don't you tell our listeners what the center is focused on and a little bit of the history and the genesis of how we got to where we are in 2025.
Sounds great. And first and foremost, Scott and Arnie, thanks so much for having us today. Excited to be here and to share a little bit more about Watson. So the story of Watson stretches all the way back to the 1970s. Where there really wasn't much of a child welfare system to speak of. It was very nascent. So when social workers or police officers, you know, had kids that they removed from households, there was nowhere really for them to go except to Janice Watson, who ran a preschool here in town. And Janice would accept these kids into her own home from the kindness of her heart. Obviously, Watson has become a much more official outfit since then. We now have two dedicated shelters here in Missoula, 12 beds apiece for a total capacity of 24 bedrooms for kids. Since then, we've grown even more in that we now have a prevention focus as well, not only providing crisis emergency shelter for kids, but yeah, also thinking kind of upstream and how we can prevent family crises from ever happening in the first place. So we have a really cool program called Healthy Foundations, in which we have two dedicated home visitors that interface with a caseload, for lack of better terminology, of families that have kids anywhere from 0 to 5 and just provide really tailored support for these families.
So are you working with children from kindergarten to like 14 or 15 or somewhere in that age range?
Yeah, even earlier. We can accept kids anywhere from 0 to 14.
And, you know, what would be the kind of makeup, you know, in terms of boys versus girls and where the age range, you know, sort of where your sweet spot is and the average stay for a child at the center?
All great questions, Arnie. So our numbers change quite a bit in terms of whether it's boys or girls, how old they are. It really just depends on the need out there. Right now, we have a lot of 11-year-olds. Sometimes we get kids on the younger side. Sometimes, not even all that long ago, we had a composition here at both of our shelters in which we had more teenagers. It really just depends on the kids. And similarly, in terms of average length of stay, it really depends on each and every situation, because we're there to meet kids in this moment of crisis, right? And provide really tailored support. So sometimes we have kids that are here for truly a matter of weeks. It's like some sort of family crisis situation that's very acute. Once that gets solved, they can go back to their families. Sometimes, we have kids that are kind of waiting on the system, whether that's to go with a foster family, maybe some relative, or even back to their parents. And sometimes those situations can be really complex and take a while. So truly, kids stay here from a matter of days to sometimes over a year.
And what are the kind of precipitating events that leads to an admission into the center?
Great question. So I would say the big three are cases of abuse, neglect, and then family crisis. And we work really hard. Studies have shown that the absolute best outcome for kids is to be reunified with their families if possible. And you see a lot of really heartwarming stories where kiddos are placed at Watson, and then families do a lot of work on the back end to remediate the situation that placed the child at Watson in the first place. And then those kids go back with their family, and they end up thriving. So it's not all dark and grim, I guess, is what I'm trying to say around here. We work really hard with families and see a lot of really encouraging stories.
So if you're providing some emergency services, if a kid is in immediate crisis, do you have 24-hour intake? Could someone be dropped off there at 2 o'clock in the morning or referred there at that time?
Yeah, we do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have staff there available to answer phones, to talk with Child Family Services, to take referrals. We can't take every child at every minute, depending on the house makeup and what the space we have, but we offer a crisis response, and we get middle of the night placements often.
And how much space do you have, Stacy?
Yeah, each shelter, we try to keep it between 8 to 12 children, so the max is 12, in each of the houses, so 24 overall.
Got it. And
So,
Andrew, sorry,
right.
Andrew, how long have you been with Watson?
It's been about 14 months. Time has really flown. I feel like,
Oh my God. You're a veteran.
yes and no. I've learned so much about the organization and really love working for it, but still, yeah, so much more to learn.
And Stacy, you
So,
just joined, right?
yeah, I'll be a month tomorrow.
And where did you
Wow.
come from?
Yeah, I come from most recently a program called Friends of the Children. It's a professional mentoring organization that pairs children between the ages of 4 to 6 with a paid professional mentor and stays with those kids for 12 plus years. So it's an evidence-based program started 30 years ago in Portland that really looks for kids that have very high barriers and low protective factors, and maybe you don't qualify for programs like Big Brothers Big Sisters or other kind of mainstream services, and then wraps those kids into holistic wraparound services for the children and their families, and then makes a commitment for 12 plus years. So that was where I was most recently, and I was the clinical director when I left.
Right. And Andrew, what did you do before?
I actually worked on political campaigns. So it's a bit of a pivot on political campaigns. My job was to rally volunteers to go talk to voters and turn them out. Similar concept doing development work here at Watson Children's Shelter. I'm asking people for their time, I'm asking them for their money.
Speaking of money, Montana has a large number of not-for-profit community-based youth agencies. I think per capita, we're among the highest in the country. Where does your income come from to support the program?
That's an excellent question. So roughly half of our operating budget comes from the state of Montana. We are paid from the general fund for shelter services that we provide kids on a daily basis. Again, in a perfect world, it'd be nice if the state funded us entirely, but that's not the case. So we have to go out and fundraise the other half. So the other half comes from grants, donors, just all privately fundraised funds. And we're able to do that because of just the tremendous generosity of the Missoula community, just showing up time and time again for the kids in our shelters. Yeah.
So is the state per diem that they pay the same for whether it's an infant or a 14-year-old?
Great question. Yes, it is.
And what is it these days? How much per diem a day?
I don't want to misspeak, but I want to say it's $182 and then some cents on top of that. Yeah, it's not a nice, even round
Okay,
number.
well, but it gives you a rough idea of what it takes to support a child, because you're not just providing food and housing, you're providing counseling and family support and all of the other things that go into protect, almost like a police thing, protect and serve the kid, the child and the family as they're trying to figure out the right course to move forward. I mean, the as you know, kids show up in crisis, and their lives are in disarray in many cases, even when they're very young. And you take on the responsibility of putting them on the right track.
Yeah, I think that the focus really early on, right away when a child enters the shelter, is a trauma-informed approach of providing stability and safety for kids who just experienced something that was very unsafe and very probably most likely traumatic in their lives. Whenever you're taken away from your family and your community, that's a crisis for a child. And so we really have excellent staff who are here to provide that support for them. Each child gets their own room. We have, toys, we have outside yards, we have a lot of space where they can experience joy, which is so important for children. And also just that sense of safety, I think, is that first piece we really want to connect with the kids to
Do
provide.
you get runaways as well?
Not frequently. Sometimes we've had kids that have been placed here that are more on the teenage side and wound up in child and family services network and awareness because of runaway cases, but not all that often.
So both of you are new, but you obviously know the history of the organization and the origins were in daycare service and then moved into a much more comprehensive program. So what would you say are the differences between Watson's Children's Center 2025 and let's say Watson's Children's Center No, 2000, 25 years ago.
Great question. I think that we have become much, much better about taking an evidence-based approach. As Stacey was speaking to earlier, just centering trauma and all that we do, right? These kids have been through so much and always keeping that in focus. I think we're better at being joyful, as Stacey said. When kids come to Watson, not only is this a safe place, but we do so many fun things and just enable these kids as much as possible to have normal, happy childhood experiences. I always love talking about our summer program because it's, I think, kind of our pride and joy. And it just is the perfect encapsulation of that joy that we do offer to kids. Over the summer, when kids are out of school, they load up into our vans at 7:30 in the morning and often aren't back until 4 or 5 in the afternoon because they're out doing so many cool things, whether that's, mining for sapphires in Phillipsburg, rafting the Clark Fork, going for horseback rides, visiting raptor rescues. I didn't know this, but we have two different raptor rescues here in Missoula, and our kids here at Watson were able to visit both and see, owls and red-tailed hawks and osprey and so on and so forth. So I think, yeah, we have gotten better again at furnishing joy.
Yeah. And I think it was
Well, I
in
think that's a good
2000.
balance in many ways to the trauma they're experiencing
Yeah.
and have experienced and have precipitated their arrival at the center. How engaged are you in providing clinical services to the children and their family? I mean, sort of an integrated approach of working with them and, whether they're a single parent or a full family, how do you re-engage the family in the situation that the child is finding themselves in?
Yeah. We have case managers at each of the house. So each of our house has a case manager that works with each child to meet both the kind of physical as well as their mental health needs. And so children are connected to therapists. We made sure that they're going to the dentist, that they're going to get their regular doctor's visits. So each of the shelter homes have a case manager that really specifically works with the child, the caseworker, and sometimes the family to make sure those needs are being met, that they're connected. And we have a good referral source in the community. And so knowing specific therapists that might work well for certain children too. And then, we do provide space for visits at the houses. We have rooms for that we can provide viewing if safety is an issue, but where kids can spend time with their caregivers that are as they're working towards reunification. But I think that often the parents have a treatment plan themselves that they're working with their caseworker, their CFS worker, and so and hopefully their wraparound services to kind of meet the needs that they need to do. So we're really focused on the child and their goals.
And is the primary goal reunification, or is the primary goal making sure that the outcome for the child is in their best interest long term, which doesn't always mean going back to their family?
It's always the child's best interest when we know whenever possible, if it's safe, that isn't with their caregivers, their parents, but it definitely needs to be the safest and their best interest for the children, which isn't
You've been
always.
there almost a month or just a month, Stacey. What have you found that's been surprising to you in the first month on the job?
I've worked kind of next to Watson for a long time. Before I was at Friends of the Children, I was at Mountain Home Montana, which is a residential facility for young moms and kids. And so and when I was at Friends of the Children's, Friends of the Children, we had a couple of kids that actually stayed at Watson for a little bit. So I've had a pretty good connection with Watson. But in the first week, I went to our all staff meeting. Every Tuesday, we do a large all staff meeting. And just hearing the dedication, the care, the thoughtfulness that each staff brought to the how can we could best support these children, I was just blown away by. So I guess it's the staff. I'm just really honored to work with this team.
How large is the staff, Stacy?
I'm sorry, was that how we have 48 staff
Wow.
now.
Have you managed that many people before?
Mountain Home Montana was not quite there. I was the clinical director, so I ran several
That's
different
right.
programs, which supervised, and I was overseeing the house as well. But I think even then we were in the 30s, so this is the largest, definitely.
And there's always, you get into this kind of work. We experience this a lot talking to directors of program. So whether it's, Caitlin Borgman, where she's doing her work now, or the Montana Innocence Project, people get involved because they're passionate about the issue, or they're passionate about, in this case, children, at risk and in difficult situations. And then you end up becoming an administrator, managing 48 people and running a budget and raising money and all these other things, which, many people that get into this work aren't trained to do that kind of work. Do you rely a lot on the board for assistance with that sort of thing?
The board has been really helpful. We definitely have an executive committee that I meet with regularly, but I've been on the leadership teams at both Friends of the Children as well as Mountain Home Montana. And so I've had a lot of experience working directly with other departments. And so I also had my own private practice. I'm a licensed clinical social worker as well. So I've had my own private practice where I ran my own books and did
Right.
those other pieces. So I think, I've had experiences in other in the other areas. And I've always supervised large, not always, but for the last 10 years, I've supervised large numbers of people who are also supervising people. So I think it's been on the job training, but I've done it for a while now.
Well, and it's a good, it's sort of a good mix, but it does take you a little bit away from where your heart was originally when you got into this work, being a clinical social worker. Andrew, I don't want to let you off the hook. So you worked in political campaigns, getting out the vote and all that, and those are pop-up organizations. Campaigns don't last all that long, and then they evaporate. So what's the difference between doing that and now having a permanent home for 14 months that's going to continue and continue and continue?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. There's definitely a lot more of a sustainability component to your point, working here at Watson than at campaigns. When I was working on campaigns, any money that I was given, it's like, here's the deadline by which this money essentially needs to be burned, right? Get out there and do everything you need to do. So it's more of a marathon and less of a sprint, but a lot
Right.
of transferable skills. Ultimately, again, boils down to I was asking people for their time. Now I'm asking them for their money and really enjoying it.
Arnie and I were
So
just,
in,
Arnie,
yeah.
sorry, Arnie, Arnie and I were just in the intro talking about how nice it was to have a conversation with a community-based group where we weren't going to talk politics because we talked.
Yes.
So, but you know what though, in any role that you do, especially that's community-oriented, politics seems to come into play. How do you mitigate that? How do you keep that away from the conversation and not get caught up in that? Because everybody seems to have an interest that they want heard and addressed.
I think for an organization like Watson, really like thinking about the safety, security of our community and our children is something everybody cares about. And so finding places where we align, and I think that with an organization like Watson, there's so many places that we can align and maybe down the road have difficult conversations where we see things differently. But I think that relationship first is really important, and we're a relationship-based organization and we respect our entire community. And I just do think that there's a lot of places that we do align that where we don't have to worry as much as maybe where we cross. But
Yeah, I'll add that support for Watson is pretty universal. Just the diversity of perspectives and viewpoints amongst the people that support Watson is pretty staggering. And I find it really encouraging that Watson remains a very, very apolitical organization. Kids that are in crisis and need emergency shelter, tugs the heartstrings of everyone out there, regardless of your background.
And Stacy, you, how long have you been in Missoula for?
I've been in Missoula for 23 years. I did leave for about a year. I went to Portland and then to Kalispell back home for a minute, and then I grew up in the Flathead Valley.
Okay,
So
so this is
I've
home
been
for you. But Andrew, I know, took a moved his family in a vehicle out here.
Missoula.
Where
Sure
were
did.
you coming? Where did you come from, Andrew?
Columbus, Ohio, of all places, but I'm from Denver
Arnie.
originally.
Well, I know about Columbus, the headquarters of Wendy's. Besides, everybody wants to talk about Ohio State, obviously, in Columbus, but it's also the headquarters of Wendy's and a number of other corporations. So it's heartland of Mid-America.
But you got your career started there, Arnie, in Ohio.
Cincinnati. I was in Cincinnati. We were down the
Right.
road. We were a little west and down the road from Columbus, Ohio.
That's right.
I do want to point out, we touch on the political issue, but there is an advocacy issue in children's welfare,
Yeah.
and when you're working in a system in which, there are policies and practices at the state level or the federal level that are, that need to be fine-tuned. Do you get involved directly or through any of your, peer organizations and try to affect any policy changes that affect children and families?
We are involved in the Behavioral Health Alliance, which has a legislative focus. As Stacey, gets more and more into the role, I'm sure that that will be a bigger component of what she does, is participating in that group that makes policy recommendations to our state legislative branch.
Because in the past, I believe, I hadn't had much contact with the center since Fran Albrecht was there. And I know she occasionally was in Helena, talking on issues and talking in front of committees and all that sort of thing. And I think that's, a reasonable role for an organization that has so much hands-on experience is to educate policy and decision makers about the things that they're doing well and other things that they ought to take into consideration. I mean, there's a lot of that work that goes on at that level. Whether, and it's not just whether you get more, per diem, but it's what are the regulatory, conditions? What are the legislative, conditions in the state for children at risk? Because some of these things are more systemic than just individual family issues.
Definitely. I can
Let's
see
do a
that.
quick ID, real quick ID, where we are talking to Watson Children's Center with Stacy Hogue, Executive Director, and Andrew Vashenko, Assistant Director. Arnie.
Yes. So, how do you differentiate your two roles? You're here together. You seem to be seamless, which is pretty good after just a short period of time. How do you differentiate, who takes, what role and what responsibility in on the leadership team?
I think the roles are pretty well defined. I mean, there's pieces that we work really closely together for development. Andrew's been phenomenal to work with. He's obviously an expert, has just really jumped into this work, has really built some great relationships in the community, and so he can re lead very confidently. In my role, I have not just like the development piece of it, but also making sure that operations is going and HR is working and the program's running well. So I'm juggling maybe more a bigger variety of pieces. And
Right.
he's kind of the expert in the development field. And then I get to go out and kind of walk alongside Andrew and support him in this
How is
work.
that, by the way, Stacy, in the sense of the operational side? Because that's, as a general manager of my company, I know how challenging that could be in terms of it's just more people to manage and ideas and
I think one thing that that I
relationships.
was expecting, because I did come from a shelter that was 24/7 staffed. But the needs of the households change really frequently. So when I first got here, there
Right.
was mostly 11-year-olds in the house, and then we had three siblings that moved in that were between the ages of 3 to 6, and that just totally changed the dynamic of the home. And so for staff, that was hard, right? They had this flow that they were used to, and now
Sure.
this new change. And so I think that supporting staff with the ebb and flow of the changes in the shelter, specifically, is a large part of the work that we do here. We have amazing team though, again. So we have two house manager at each. We have a program director. We have the case manager. So there's levels of support, but definitely so supporting all of that.
I have a quick follow-up to that, which is how do you manage the emotional health of your staff? Because this is very trying work. This is very emotionally draining work. And it's, you're not always dealing with, rainbows and pots of, unicorns. This is tough stuff.
Well, when Arnie was speaking about moving away from like that direct work, and I have felt over the years as I've moved into more supervision type roles, that has kind of been the joy for me as well, is to really just connect with staff and offer them that support.
Sure.
Because we use a model of reflective supervision where we meet every week with staff, really checking in with how they're doing, both like, what's happening in the shelter, what's happening in their day-to-day, but also how are they doing as a person? Because
Right.
taking care of those emotional needs are so important so that they can come to work their full self, feel supported, and offer that best care to the children that are here. So I think that's kind of my passion actually with this type of work. When I was in graduate school, actually, my policy paper was all about supervision and nonprofits and the importance of that, because if you don't provide quality, regular supervision, staff burnout.
Sure. No, there's no question about the burnout factor. For our listeners, can you, without divulging any names, can you walk us through a typical or a case that you would like to share with us from intake to outcome of how it would work, so people can get an understanding on a personalized basis of one of your clients that are coming into the program, how it works from beginning to end.
Yeah, I have a great example that comes to mind. We had a kiddo here at Watson. His dad had relinquished all rights, parental rights, and was at another shelter elsewhere in Montana, actually as an adult. And through the grapevine, heard that his child was at Watson. He really got his act together, got sober, utilized the services offered at this adult shelter to stabilize his life, and actually became reunified with his son. That's a really heartwarming, fantastic story. And to this day, they're thriving, not in Missoula, but in another community here in Montana. I think that story has been repeated a lot, where families end up, despite a traumatic period where their kids are at Watson, they end up working things out and are stronger because of the interventions that we provide.
So the intervention's done, the family's reunited. What services do you offer as sort of aftercare services, or do you just refer them to other agencies for that?
That's
I
a
mean,
great question.
you don't cut them off cold turkey, right?
Yeah, with Healthy Foundations, it's designed to be a preventative program, again, trying to head off kids from ever needing Watson in the first place. But it
Right.
actually pairs very nicely as a service to families when they are reunited, because, yeah, they can have a home visitor that comes to them, meets with them as much as they need, up to a couple times a week, connecting them with other services in the community, coaching them on parenting, so on and so forth. So it doubles not only as a preventative service, but kind of an option for families. It is completely voluntary, but if they need that extra support, that is something we can offer in-house.
So how long has the second house been in operation?
2010. Yeah, the second one, that was one of the other things I thought about is how we've changed is we've doubled in services. Yeah, we had a
Right.
second house since 2010.
And so obviously neither of you were there when that came about, but there obviously was a need for fundraising to do that. And based on what you know, how did that go? Was that a struggle, or was it easy to get a second facility funded, and double the size?
From the outside looking in, and I don't know what they actually experienced on the inside, but
Right.
actually, it was my first introduction to Watson. I remember driving over the Higgins Bridge and seeing the signs that they needed to double in size. They needed to build a new house, and it seemed like that happened on target. You know, I think that they were able.
Sure.
I think the community has shown up for Watson for the years that we've been here, but I
Yeah.
don't know what it looked like from the inside.
Yeah, hard to say what it looked like from the inside. My general impression, though, is that Fran Albrecht, who you mentioned, Arnie, was a
Yeah.
really good community presence and fundraiser. And she knocked that aspect of leadership completely out of the
Yeah, we lost her to Bozeman, but I understand all of
park.
that. So looking at the program now, for 1 month, for 14 months, as you project into the future, what do you want to offer that you aren't able to offer now?
You know, I think that as, you know, a new executive director in an organization that has some other key staff who are newer, right now I just want stabilization. I want us to kind of have some roots, to have some consistency. And as a new leader in this at Watson, I want to do a lot of listening. But one of the things that we've really identified is case management that we already provide. There are ways that maybe we could improve that and make it a billable service through Medicaid, and then we could also provide therapy in-house. So we are looking at the possibility of adding therapeutic services down the road. But again, I think that we want to kind of stabilize right now, listen to the community, but that is something that we've thought could be helpful to the kids to have that in-house.
Would you be able to expand capacity at some point? I know that there you have land behind you, well, where you are now, but is there that any ideas of that for the future?
I'm not sure what discussions.
Yeah, I don't think at this stage. Maybe at some point in the future, we could look at facilities elsewhere in the state. But I think that would be really,
Yeah.
really far down the road,
Yeah.
and not on
Sure.
the horizon. At all.
Yeah.
Do you use volunteers in the program operation?
Great question. We do. We love working with all sorts of different volunteers, whether that's corporate groups that are doing a one-off. We have a women's guild, a group of ladies who have volunteered with Watson for, gosh, almost 20 years now. We have some other volunteer groups that went through a very stringent process to be able to interact directly with the kids. We're talking, fingerprints, background checks, at training that's mandated by the state of Montana, covering all sorts of different stuff. So for folks that are willing to go through that, we do have opportunities to interact directly with the kids. But all that to say, yes, we love volunteers, and there are both ways to, support the work that Watson does without interacting directly with the kids, and also to interact with the kids. Granted, if you're willing to go through a very intensive process to be able to do that.
Well, we have Halloween coming up, Thanksgiving, Christmas. What extra things do you do at that time? Kids are now, the kids that are in residence during that time, it's a holiday season and they're not necessarily in their normal or their previous environment. So how do you make that more of a family, jovial experience for them?
Excellent question. I always love highlighting our kitchen manager, Anna. She's not the kind of person who lives for adulation, and then anytime she's managed, she's mentioned, she kind of is cows up a little bit. She's like, "Don't talk about me." But she definitely deserves all the praise in the world because she's a fantastic chef, and her full-time job is to make delicious, nutritious meals for the kids. And she goes all out come holidays. I mean, holidays are kind of defined by food and community around food, right? So come Thanksgiving, Anna, makes turkey and all the usual Thanksgiving fixtures, makes special Christmas meals. So that's an important aspect, I think, of providing that holiday warmth is all the work that Anna does.
Does she do it for both houses? Does she cook for all the kids and obviously some staff that are there as well?
It's a full-time job, and she actually has an assistant as well. So we have two full-time staff dedicated just to nutrition.
And she also goes and gets all the provisions and groceries and all of that.
Oh, she sure does. She's well known at Costco.
You don't want to lose her. That's a tough per that's a tough slot to fill for
Yep.
sure. When you're doing that on a customized, basis, trying to prepare every one of those meals on, on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. She knocks it out of the park and also meets dietary restrictions. We've got a couple of kids right now that are lactose intolerant, and it makes them just as wonderful meals with just as much
That's
attention.
good.
It has to cook for two different crowds, essentially.
I remember in the previous history making some Christmas contributions to buy toys and gifts and other things for residents at the center. Is that still a tradition?
Absolutely. And like most other nonprofits, the holidays are really a make or break time of year for us, in that those contributions carry us through much of the year. Percentage-wise, a pretty high percentage of our fundraising all comes in through the door during December.
Well, make sure you reach out to Scott and I. I'm happy to do it, help out again at the holiday season.
Well, thanks,
Well,
Arnie.
thank you, Arnie.
And Scott.
It's
Scott, by extension, who got volunteered.
Arnie does that from time to time. But
I like to volunteer, Scott. I mean, I don't want to be alone in doing this, and it's an important thing, particularly around the holidays. I know based on some of my past work experience in the juvenile justice and children's service area in a previous life. It was very tough in the residential setting at that particular time, particularly if there weren't enough, gifts and holiday spirit, because you see it all on TV, you see it in social media. They're looking at all that kind of stuff. And if they're left out of that, that can be, traumatic, particularly, you're 7, 8, 9, 10, you still believe in Santa, and then, and so for some of your, some of your residents and some of your clients. So you have to give them a good experience. I like the summer program, but I also think the holiday program is equally important. And I'm sure you do the same thing for some of their birthdays and those kinds of other memorable events.
Absolutely. The Missoula community, again, just does such a tremendous job of supporting us. And yeah, come Christmas time, the number of toys and fun things that come through the store is pretty staggering. We'll clear out the lobby, and then a couple hours later, in the run-up to Christmas, it's filled back up again because people think of our kids and want them to have a great holiday experience. So we, it's a huge emphasis, and because again, the Missoula community is just so wonderful, we're able to make the holidays truly magical.
Do you do events with both houses together regularly, or they do them individually?
Great question. A mix of both. That volunteer community that I mentioned earlier, that volunteers directly with the kids, they come out once a month to do some sort of fun activity with the kids. In that instance, the houses are combined. For Christmas, I think the houses are generally separate, though.
You guys mentioned before, Mountain Home. And I'm just curious, are there other organizations that you work with around the city and the state that you'd like to kind of talk about?
Sure. We've worked quite a bit with youth homes. Here, who run a bunch of different residential homes for kiddos. Some of the services they provide are a little bit more, they're higher therapeutic need, essentially. So we're an emergency shelter, we're the gateway, right? We're the first line of defense for kids that have nowhere else to turn. Once they come here, again, we work either to reunify kids, get them into the foster care system, if that's a viable option. But sometimes kids would benefit from a residential living facility that's a group home, but that has a higher level of therapeutic services on tap. So a lot of times we work with youth homes to place kids that originally came to Watson, but again would benefit from moving up that level of care ladder.
Got it. And any state organizations or state, any folks in Helena that you guys are working hand in glove with?
Yeah, the Behavioral Health Alliance does really important legislative work. Would love to shout them out because they advocate, just again, all things behavioral health, and do a great job of not just focusing on just adults, but also incorporating us to advocate for kids as well.
No, that's great. Arnie, I know that that's a big, when we talk to organizations like this, it takes a village in the sense of how to accomplish the
Well, no
goals that they
question.
have.
You can't bring, I don't believe you can't bring a child in, that's in some kind of trauma or crisis or, a change in their life in even for a year and then out and, cold, I said earlier, cold turkey. You need a whole, continuum of care availability to help them, manage and navigate, what's ahead.
Definitely. Well, let's do this, Arnie. Let's take a break. Our guests are Stacy Hoag, Executive Director of Watson Children's Center, and Andrew Vashenko, Assistant Director of Watson. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, the Director of Development, Andrew Vashenko, and the Executive Director of Watson Children's Center, Stacy Hoag.
In the few minutes remaining, Stacy and Andrew, can you tell us a little bit about what you got planned? What events? Is there a tour that people can take? Are there other events on the horizon? And how do folks get a hold of you for either intake purposes or for contributions or for participation as a volunteer? Give us the rundown.
Great. Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to get to know the community as the new executive director of Watson Children's Shelter. And so one of the things I thought would be fun is to do a shelter tour. So on November 12th from 9:30 to 10:30, we're going to open our door and just welcome anybody that is interested in coming on over to the shelter. And they get to meet me, and we'll have some coffee and pastries, and then talk a little bit about the programming, talk a little bit about Watson, and do a tour of the facility. We'll also have a couple other staff present, such as Andrew and some of our direct care workers as well, to talk more about the work that they do.
That's fantastic. And what about how they get a hold of you? Give us the information that they need to know with the website and anything
By the way,
else.
what's the address for the open house?
Yep, the address
Yeah.
is 2901 Fort Missoula Road. It's at our Fort Shelter, which is right off of the Community Medical Center campus.
Yeah. And our website is at shelterforchildren.com. And they can find a lot of information there.
Oh, actually, our website, our email domains are shelterforchildren.com, but it's watsonchildrenshelter.org.
These are my things I have to
Yeah.
learn. Right.
Oh, no, that's
WatsonChildrenCenter.org.
where they could Google you guys and find it. That's how most people
That's
work.
true. Works great.
I got to give a shout out to these guys, Arnie, because we work with Andrew and with Stacy, and this will be Stacy's first year with our Christmas for Kids, and
Right.
they're a partner of ours there, and they actually are kind of helping in many ways. And this is the greatest organization to work with. They're just so
Yeah.
easy to work with and a joy to work with, and we're lucky as a community to have them.
Yeah,
Yep, there's no question about that.
we love working with Town Square Media for Christmas for Kids. It's such an amazing fundraiser that does such, a vital service to our community. And you guys absolutely knock it out of the park. Increasingly every year, $130,000 plus last year.
More
Mind-boggling.
pressure,
Hey,
pressure.
on that positive note, Scott.
Yes, Arnie.
Oh, and before we go, I
Yeah.
can make a quick plug about all that we have going on in the near future, fundraising wise at Watson.
Please.
We have a playground that needs replacing over at our Fort Shelter, so we'll be raising $185,000 for that out in the community. We'll have a very public campaign coming up soon. And then in April, we're going to host our first ever gala. It'll be at the DoubleTree on April 18th. We're calling it Brighter Tomorrows, and the theme and decor will be inspired by that summer program that I talked about a little bit. Just because, again, it's one of the best ways that encapsulates how we offer kids hope and the chance at a brighter tomorrow. So more information will follow, and Scott, I'm sure I will be in touch very soon about broadcasting more information about our gala out to the world and our playground project.
We're happy to help. You know that, Andrew, anytime, anywhere. And we're going to have you guys back on around that time to maybe put a little more emphasis on the big gala event.
Yes.
That would be wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Great.
Of
Hey,
course.
Stacey, Andrew, thank you very much for joining us today. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you so much. It was a pleasure for us as well.
Thank you, folks. Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
Yep. See you next Sunday, Scott. Take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.